just. Oh. Okay. They're even gone. I thought we were rounding up on PBECB. Okay, I take it it rounded itself up. Because there were some issues I would imagine that we meant still to deal with. You would agree with me, members. Can we round up, Mr. Symington? Mr. Foster? One of those areas of interest is the point raised by DAF that talks to new forms of barriers, which is standardization of some of those products. It has been coming. You've already spoken about it. What I was saying is if you can just round up on our session so that we formally are having it out of the way.
Chairman, if I was to wrap this up, I would say that as a PPCB team, we've really appreciated the work that we've done in the last year to build for this year with DAF. We found the working relationship has bedded down nicely. We still have a few loose ends to tie. We've got a compact in place, which both parties are looking at the moment, to ensure that the relationship is sound going forward, because I think this year, more than any, emphasizes the need to operate as a team. So it's the industry, PPCB and DAF, working closely, and I think we can beat a lot of our challenges if we do that. Thank you, Chairman.
Is this the last word for the PPCB? Can I maybe make a last comment? Mr. Chairman, I would like to make use of this opportunity. It's my last meeting in this capacity in the PPCB as part of the board. I'm stepping down now. And I want to thank the Minister, the Portfolio Committee, for the constructive questions, sometimes criticism, which made the PPCB over the last number of years a better organization, so I thank you for that. Also DAF for their cooperation, Stuart referred to that, and then to the other PPCB board members, as well as the management team. I really appreciate the inputs they're doing. Thank you very much for the people around here for positive comments, but it boils down to the work they did in the last number of last year or two. Thank you very much for that. So, and in the future, I will sit back as a customer and with excitement look at the very good work the PPCB do for our industries to make our industry successful in the international environment. I thank you.
Okay. Mrs. Palliser, you wanted to say something?
Yes, Chairperson, I'm not convinced there was a response, a very well response about the Act. A response that was very reluctant of coming soon. I quoted a specific time frame, because if there is a political intervention needed, then it can be with the Act as it stands now. And one would like to sense, when is the bill coming? Soon can be 2030 with the time frame of the NDP. So one needs a specific answer. And according to the operational explanations, I'm also not convinced it was responded well, Chairperson. Because if you can look at this presentation, one would like a breakdown of which of these different industries is making the volume of the value chain. It must be unpacked here. As it stands, this this is consultant captured. You know, a consultant presentation is very well scientifically, academically captured with no details. If one reads this and you are not part of this portfolio, you will never understand this presentation. That is what I wanted to submit. We need to know when is the bill coming if we say we want intervention and to add value to this.
Maybe we should look at it differently. I also hear the board and the staff of PPCB talking about, you know, how many bills are coming straight to Parliament. You mentioned the figure 9, and we have a figure 23. Whether all of those are going to come through, to an extent, that becomes a matter of the department, because the entities, they may have their own ideas, but the processes, they go through the department. We have a responsibility as a Committee of Parliament. 2011, 2012, to a large extent 2010, we only got to hear the department bringing a legislation only last year, which was the veterinary bill. And we kept on asking the department, 2010, 2011, when are we coming? When are we getting something through? So that has been the problem that the department has been confronted with. So I don't think you will get much, if any, response from the entity itself on the processes of the legislation. At best, what they do is to do whatever is expected of them. The department, they are the ones that have to take the process forward and bring it here. I think that that's generally how I would, caution us in really dealing with this issue related to legislation. Well, the other details as to where and the breakdown, I think you would have to, you know, get that information through to Parliament. Are we fine with that? Is that okay, Mom? Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Chair, I agree with what you've said. But what the entity could perhaps tell us is that as far as their inputs are concerned, the proposals that they had made, where are they at the moment in this entire, whether it's lying constipated somewhere, it has left them already. That's what's important, Chair, and then we know where to press the button.
Talk about the legislation. They did mention that they've signed it off.
Yeah, but now from them, Chair, where has it gone to? Is it with a state law advisor? Or did it go to the department? And is it now constipated at the department? That's what we need to know, Chair.
We need to establish who to give the medicine to.
It can only be the department. Yes.
Thank you. I'm not sure if the system is constipated per se, but honourable members, initially the department had, I think, 23 bills that were identified. They have been subsequently been a prioritised list of 9 bills. The prioritisation being that I think the realisation that there is a bottleneck in terms of one consultant being used to run through the process. And I think the PPECB referred to Professor Nick Olifir. That is the person that's really assisting the department. 2 weeks ago, the bill was signed off from the department to Professor Olifir. We are waiting input from him. Once the bill has been finalized from his side, it has to go through the state law advisors and then public consultation before it can arrive here. Those would be the follow-up steps. I'm not sure if that sheds light.
Can't we stop this process now? We are heading nowhere. The processes are within the department. As to where within the department, consultants, state law advisors, and you name them, is a detail. Once it is signed off from the entity, it goes straight to the department and all its internal processes before it gets here, including the publishing or gazetting for comments. So those are all details. Okay? Okay, members, without really wasting, not wasting rather, without spending more time on these matters, those processes shall come to us. Unfortunately, there are consequences, negative or otherwise, in delaying. So we have to deal with those matters at that point in time. I think we have covered a great deal of work insofar as the PPECB is concerned. A great job is done. Of course, we still need to look into a whole host of other matters related to, you know, future projections and what gets to be entailed, you know, in those projections, and your internal structures and the vision and mission. What actually did that mean, you know, in enhancing, you know, that future vision? Those are all details that we'll have to look into. But overall, the plan and also the appropriation, to an extent, members are quite confident that with the good work that is being done, we really need to plead for more assistance in terms of financial, you know, help, so to speak. 600,000 rand that comes from the department may just not be too enough. You might wish to say, how much more can we go, given the fact that, you know, there is a great deal of amount of work done insofar as, you know, income generation on the part of the entity itself. We have a similar instance with OVP, where they are equally doing so much good work on their own without much of any help, insofar as financial assistance is concerned. So there are a few other entities that are doing this much. Okay, let's thank OVP, PPECB for that presentation, and we'll take it further with all these other processes of budget vote and you name them. Thank you. It's up to you to remain. It's up to you to... But one thing for sure before you close, is that when we bring these two entities together, we see them as cousins. We cluster them as a result. That's why we even had to, even when we brought together your Veterinary Council, your ARC, your OVP, again, these, we saw them as cousins. So whatever one is doing impacts on the other. So it always assists when others listen to the others, like they have listened to you. If I were you, I would have an obligation of sitting and listening, if I were you. Members, that then brings to the end of PPECB's presentation on submission, questions and answers. The time is for National Cash Marketing Council.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Ntombi Msimang, the chairperson of the NAMC. With me, I've got the other council members, and I'll ask them to sort of show themselves. There's Andre Cronier. Andre is from Tiger Brands, and he is responsible for value chains within Tiger Brands. In fact, because of how each of our councillors plays a certain role, next week they'll be launching some of what, as a company, they've been working on, but it's along the lines of what we do about replacing imports with local produce in what they manufacture. And I think they will be inviting some of the portfolio committees to Modimolle, those who can make it. We've got Mina Gill. Mina is an ostrich farmer in Northwest, and she's on our board. We've got Lita Mapkin. He's with the Land Bank. We've got Dr. John Patches from Agribees. Unfortunately, he'll be leaving shortly, but he is here. One person who's not here is Mari. Mari is with the Consumer Council, but she couldn't make it today. So did Andrew Young. He also couldn't make it, and he is with the Fresh Produce Market in KZN. Then we've got Tammy Zim. She's a timber farmer and a pig farmer in KZN. We have two vacancies within our council. It's the deputy chair, who became unwell and he asked to leave. And we've also got another vacancy. But I think the department is taking care of that. We just have been without them, at least for the good part of a year. On our council, we also sit with the CEO and the CFO. That's Mr. Ramabulana and Sarah. They're there. We've got our chair of audit, Paul Slack, who doesn't sit on council. He's an independent chair of audit. He couldn't come, but I know last year we came in with him. The NAMC, who's operating this? Oh. The NAMC has, as its objectives, increasing market access for all participants, promotion of the efficiency in the marketing of agricultural products, optimization of export earnings from agricultural products, and the enhancement of the viability of the agricultural sector. The past year, Chair, has been rather trying, especially when we consider the last point. We have a sector that is very troubled, especially around agricultural marketing. We've got the global slump that you've been talking about. Input costs are increasing. Primary producers are saddled with very high levels of debt. And of course, in the marketing chain, we have the uneven system for primary producers. In South Africa, where we have really no subsidies because of what WTO says. But we know that where we send our produce, they have some kind of subsidy, or they call them incentive. So in what we are going to cover today, what we have been doing, we have been, in the past year, we've dealt with the deterrent sectoral determination and the vulnerable workers discussion. We've been very much part of that. And that has been because if we are going to make an impact in access to markets, we need to understand the environment that we are living in. And in the past year, it's really not been easy. We've been involved in the sectoral determination discussions also. We know about the 105. While we know that it's not enough for farm workers as a salary, we need to also appreciate that the producers also need to be profitable, or rather to be sustainable. Let's not even say profitable. So we have been working as the NAMC this very thin balance of understanding from all sides what the impact of the climate that we live in is. And we are almost at the end of, with other stakeholders, mainly the farm owners and the workers and labor, coming up with some kind of social compact, which will say, as government, these are the different departments that can play a role, and as the private sector, this is the role that can be played, and as the NAMC, how do we see this affecting the market? We've been dealing with market access for new farmers along the value chain. It's very difficult, but because we're in a market access entity, we have to find a way, especially to make their produce to access the African market. But the CEO will say more about that. On a high level, I think I can just say we are still struggling with the impact of the 20% transformation levy that the commodities are collecting. We're also, I think, working on that. We have some kinds of suggestions. We are meeting, we continue to meet with the trust, and I hope very soon we will find a way. And on that note, Chair, I would just say the council committees are the Audit and Risk Committee, and we have councillors sitting chairing these, the Human Resource and Remuneration Committee, Risk Management Committee. We separated this because the Audit and Risk, they identify the risks. This one is the one that has to tell us that the risks that were identified have been taken care of, they're being managed. And then we have the Management Committee. As a closing remark, we've just completed within the NAMC a board evaluation exercise. We contracted an outside entity to look at our board and its effectiveness. And I think we will be having those reports in a short while, because we felt we must have an independent person to assess whether as a board we are really doing what we need to be doing. And I think on that, I will just ask the CEO to take over.
Well, what's the name of the organization again that pulled together all these farmers unions? The name of the organization?
The Agri-Sector Unity Forum. But otherwise, in NAMC, we are on all this so that we can see how it affects
Agri-Sector Unity Forum.
Yes.
She is the chair of that forum, Mrs. Msimang. Dr. Petches is part of the secretariat of that. So within the National Agriculture Marketing Council,
yes,
we have dominance of that Agri-Sector Unity Forum. Congratulations to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I could say to the House that the Agri-Sector Unity Forum consists of about, well, it's well over 95% of organized agriculture in South Africa, both, well, because of our history, the black organized farmers and the white commercial farmers. And we really are, I think we are finding each other, because within the sector we felt it's important that we now start knowing what the other side does, because through that we also can maybe make an impact on the conditions of the workers on the farms. And I must say the department staff has been very supportive, and the portfolio committee too, in all these exchanges. Thank you. Ronald.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Ramabula.
Thank you, Chair. I, what I'll try and do is talk to the slides, one, to save time, but I will also request your indulgence to talk to the slides to try and explain some of the issues that you raised in the previous discussions. So I'll try and do that. These are the four divisions we have within the NAMC. Chairperson raised a number of issues that we face and that we discuss when we sit up with DAF, and I know these are the challenges that DAF addresses, looks at every time we meet. Issues relating to ensuring food security for all, and there are a number of programs, issues such as CASP. I'll talk a little bit about CB11 and ensuring that we have a proper livestock insurance improvement program and ensuring that it works. Issues related to development of SMEs, Chairperson has already spoken about market access and how do we turn around some of the irrigation schemes that we have. You made mention of we spoke a lot about the National Development Plan, and there are a number of issues that we picked up from the Development Plan, and some of those issues that we picked up will be reflected in the presentation that I will make. However, there are other realities that we face, and the Chairperson has spoken to this. Issues in terms of high level of debt in primary agriculture, issues relating to new sectoral dissemination that impacts heavily on the profitability of agriculture, issues relating to high input costs and other administrative costs that have eroded the profitability as well as competitiveness of agriculture. And these issues are issues that we have discussed when we come to the portfolio committee and have impacted on the profitability of agriculture. And I will reflect some of those issues when we present. You have been speaking a lot about the use of non-tariff barriers that limits export of agricultural products, especially to Europe. I will move quickly and highlight that this is the employment profile of the NAMC. We believe it's fairly representative. There's an improvement in terms of ensuring that the profile represents the demographics of South Africa. We are a fairly small organization, so we don't have a lot of people, but in terms of what we have done, we ensure that we believe it's fairly representative. The Chairperson has spoken about risk. We have identified the number of risks we face, and in each and every one of these risks, we have developed clear mitigation strategies as to how we could mitigate against each and every one of those risks. And we take that seriously, and we have ensured that we bring in outside expertise to help us mitigate against the risks we have identified. So let me talk a little bit about some of the programs we have. One of the programs we have is statutory measures, and I will use this to help raise some of the issues that we discussed earlier. The Act provides that we have about four statutory measures, the main one being levies, records and returns, control of exports, as well as registration. Chair, we assist 22 industries, and over the past 4 years, those industries collectively raised over 1.4 billion. The amount that they have raised has been used, one, market development and penetration. So when we speak about citrus export into Europe, and we talk about the fact that product has moved out of Europe into other markets, this is the money that industries have been using to develop new markets in new areas. When we talk about research in terms of understanding new markets and understanding non-tariff barriers that impact on our exports into new markets, this is the money that industry use in terms of understanding that and advising government more appropriately. When we talk about provision of reliable information, more especially because you know that government doesn't collect good information, and there are a lot of industry bodies such as SAGES and others that actually collect information that is used to take informed decision as to how the industry should operate, this is the money that we spend. There are challenges that we face in terms of transformation. There were a number of proposals that we're trying to bring to bear. This year, the target is to raise over 400 million that we spend on some of those issues. an example, over the past 4 years, we have spent 142 million on export market development. We have spent over 134 million, and we will spend more in terms of local consumer education and local market development. And that is important simply because we're facing challenges in terms of export markets. So we need to understand the South African market much better, understand the South African consumer much better, because if we do that, we'll be able to sell much better. We've spent over 354 million on research. And a lot of that money, we try as much as possible to encourage industry to spend a lot of that money into the ALC, but some of that goes to universities, and we accept that, because through that competition in terms of the research bodies, then the quality of innovation and quality of product that comes out improves. Industries, bodies such as SAGES and others receive just over 131 million over the past 4 years. We've spent about 259 million on transformation, and I'll be the first one to admit that the impact in terms of the work that we have done in terms of transformation hasn't been great, and we are putting a concerted effort to ensure that we improve on that. These are the bodies that administer a statutory measure. As I've indicated, the main ones are levies, registration, as well as recording returns. And these are the bodies that administer those statutory measures. I've provided you with a breakdown of exactly how much was collected by industry in 2012. And as I've indicated, this year the plan is to collect just over 400 million. I thought we should pick two examples in terms of market promotion and market development. And we've spoken a lot about citrus. And when you look at the amount of money that citrus collects in statutory measures, and you look at the documents that government has prepared with the assistance of citrus industry, if they had not collected the money, they wouldn't have employed the expertise that the industry in order to provide the case that government will take forward in terms of ensuring that we keep our market in Europe. So it becomes important to understand the value of the money that they collect and the capacity that is created in those industries in order for those industries to continue to survive and provide a service to the country. Provided a breakdown on money spent on research per industry, and as then indicated, some of it goes to the ARC and some of it goes to universities. Breakdown of money spent per industry on information. So let me move and talk a little bit about job creation, and this is the work we do in an attempt to change the profile of agriculture in South Africa, because we believe that we need to spend a concerted effort supporting black farmers. We have a number of development schemes that have been working very well. There are challenges in them, but we believe that this is the right way to go. The Vineyard Development Scheme has been working fairly well over the past 4 years. To date, in the Northern Cape, we've planted over 180 hectares. We plan to put in additional 300 hectares. We do this with Stell and other private companies, and we have been able to secure additional funding from the provincial department through CASP to put in additional 300 hectares. The maize and sunflower scheme has been working very well. Over the past years, we've worked with over 120 farmers. Planted this year over 9,000 hectares in the Northwest Province. The livestock scheme has been working fairly well. We have been fortunate to receive additional funding from the Eastern Cape Provincial Department. Over the past 4 years, we have sold over 6,000 cattle, raised over 42 million for smallholder farmers in the Eastern Cape. We have, on top of that, procured over 48 tons of animal feed to the value of 60 million from SMEs in the Eastern Cape. What we're doing this year is to work with the Lucerne industry to plant Lucerne in the Eastern Cape in order to complete that at least that part, the bottom part of the livestock value chain. And I'll talk about the top part when we speak to SIP. doing this year with the dairy industry. We've taken the rollover money that they had on levy, which is 60 million, and ring-fence it to support smallholder dairy farmers in the Free State province. A lot of issues in terms of the decision we've taken to support 10 black-owned dairies, but we believe that we need to ensure that at least a small number of dairies in the Eastern Cape, in the Free State, succeed and understand how that works so that we can develop a much better mechanism in terms of supporting additional black farmers in other provinces. We've been running a supply chain and logistic development program with the ITC in the Western Cape. It has worked very well. At the end of last year, we signed an agreement with the Western Cape Department to increase the coverage in terms of the program. They're spending over 300,000 on the program, and we are engaging with other provinces to understand how this works so they can use the methodology we've developed to support both fruit and vegetable farmers in their provinces, because we believe this works, and that's why the provincial department of the Western Cape has put in additional money into the program. We have a fairly developed training and development program where we work with a number of FET colleges and universities. We do a lot of work with Cornell University as well as Stellenbosch in terms of providing training, one to women entrepreneurs as well as other entrepreneurs in South Africa as well as the rest of the African continent in providing training and marketing and financial management. We have a division called Market and Commodity Research Center, and I'll talk a little bit about that. One of the programs that division looks after, it's to assist the Department of Agriculture in coordinating what we call CIP11. For us, this been given this challenge to assist was important on number of reasons. One, when you look at the investments, and I'll use two examples to explain this much better. If you look at the investments in soybean crushing in South Africa 2 years ago, we're crushing just over 300,000 tons of soybean. In 2015, we'll be crushing just over 1.3 million tons of soybean. And the investments that are being put in terms of, one, upgrading the existing crushing facilities, two, in terms of putting new crushing facilities, are done mainly through private sector investments. The question we have, and the reason why we like the CIP program, gets us to understand where those investments are. Number two, what are the opportunities to ensure that we produce a lot of the soybean, because a lot of it will be imported. So it helps us look at these industries at a much broader level and helps us help, one, DAF through its CAS program, two, Land Affairs through its recapitalization program, three, Transnet in terms of its investments and branch line to figure out exactly where we should be putting a lot of these investments. A lot of the issues that were raised on the profitability and competitiveness of certain industries that are export focused, you will realize a lot of the issues, one, the problems are water, two, our problems are infrastructure, three, are probably logistics. We have a SIP that can help us address that. And we have been asked to champion this on behalf of DAF, and we're very excited that we'll be looking at this year. Second issue that we're helping DAF through this division is to work through and hopefully finalize this year this Agri-BEE threshold study. We are doing this on behalf of the Agri-BEE Charter Council, and once we have understood and have reached agreement on this threshold study, we'll be able to get the Agri-BEE Charter codes implemented properly. Hope to finalize this program by May, and I suspect that there will be a number of issues that will work through throughout this year. The other example that I thought I should give is work that is being done on understanding contract growing have a big challenge in that a lot of the smallholder farmers that we have in South Africa are too small to ensure that contracts that they sign can be enforceable. We have mechanisms in other industries such as the grain industry, which are much cheaper through the arbitration service system. But in the rest of the economy, you don't necessarily have a system that allows for enforcement and cheaper enforcement of those contracts. So we have been working through this, and this work will feed into the current amendments in terms of the agricultural products, and so in terms of the current APEC Act, as well as the amendments that are coming through the Marketing of Agricultural Products Act. The other work that is of strategic importance to us that we're doing through this division, it's what we call the Supply and Demand Estimate Committee and the management of that. We have gone through a long process the whole of last year trying to get the Competition Commission to give us an opinion in terms of whether the way we're setting up this committee and how it will function is in compliance with the Act. We have now received that opinion, and we have a committee that now has started operating. We have the final dry run in May, and from June you will start getting figures in terms of what the S&D numbers are coming out of the country. And that we hope that will complete the picture so that we understand the estimate committee numbers, the SAGIS number, the S&D number, and then you have a clearer picture of what's happening at least within the maize, sorghum, soybean, and wheat space. Chair, we have a huge agro food chain focus, and I will highlight one or two products that are of strategic importance to us this year. We want to understand the animal feed value chain much better, because if we understand the animal feed value chain much better, we'll be able to sort out some of the competitiveness issues in the poultry industry. And number two, we'll be able to understand the investments that are coming into the soybean sector much better. So we have a huge focus, and we're doing that with DTI, the animal feed manufacturers, in order to get a much better understanding of that. Two, as you know, the poultry industry has put an application for a tariff, a higher tariff on imported poultry. We were in full support of that application, and this work we're doing with ITEC in terms of understanding the various scenarios that have been proposed in order for ITEC to take a much, much better decision in terms of poultry. So I thought I should highlight those two. For those honorable members who participated in and who have looked at the agri-benchmark work, you will see that the value of it in terms of comparing typical farms in South Africa as compared to 22 other countries help us benchmark our level of competitiveness as commercial agriculture compared to our competitors in other countries. We felt that having done that and having stabilized that, it is important to ensure that we compare our smallholder farmers in the country as well as compare them to other farmers, other farms outside the country. So we're rolling out the grain, livestock, and fruit agri-benchmark networks in the country so that we can collect additional data that will support our smallholder farmers. We'll continue with what I'll call our bread and butter things that we do, produce the food cost review, the food price monitors, the import cost monitors, produce the trade probes, as well as the fruit flows. Those will continue and continue to provide valuable information and insight to industries that are impacted. Chef, I will stop there and allow the CFO to talk about the finances and then some questions.
Thank you, Chair. The budget of NAMC stands as follows. We received a budget allocation letter from DAP last year in December, and the budget allocation for NMC for the MTF period is 33 million and 36 and 37 for 2015-16. This is an increase of 5.3% as compared to 2012-13, and an increase again of 6.5% comparing 2013 and 2014-15, and also an increase of 5.3% comparing 2014 and 2015-16. We received additional funding of 724,972 and 1.267. This is after we have made a submission to National Treasury and DAF for our request of additional funding. There were a number of issues that we requested additional funding on, but we received only additional funding for improvement in the condition of service, and this was allocated to the personnel budget. We are anticipating to generate interest on the grants that we are going to receive from National Treasury, from DAF, and through DAF from National Treasury of 700, 850, 900, and 954. How we generate this interest: when we receive the budget from DAF, we invest the surplus fund to investment accounts with Standard Bank. That's how we generate the income, the interest, sorry. Budget allocation, the program, this is how we have allocated the budget in terms of in various programs within the NMC for the MTF period 2013-14 to 2015-16. In terms of budget per standard item on personnel, we allocated 20,721,000, which is 61% of our total budget of 33,819,000. And on administration, we allocated 23% of our total budget for 2013-14. And on professional, we allocated 15% of our total budget for 2013-14, and also on assets, which is capital expenditure, we allocated only 1%. You will note that there's a decrease in professional services. That is because of the reduction in the budget allocated to National Red Meat Project for 2013-14. What we did, we allocated only the additional funding that we have received from DAF, the one that I've mentioned when I start with my presentation. I think from finance part, is that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present. I think we'll wait for questions.
Thank you. That is a presentation from from National Agriculture Marketing Council. You know, I always find it intriguing with all these duplications that are taking place within the departments and entities themselves. To an extent, we begin to wonder as to what really informs. I mean, if you are going to listen to a number of departments and entities, you're going to find lots of research. Whether they have anything to do with agriculture or not. But on the other hand, you have the department. You have an entity called ARC. Of course, it is dedicated. It is doing a specific, you know, job over and above that. It also gets to do work on foot and mouth disease and related. Whether it wouldn't have been more of a case of having a lot more impact if you were to have had, say, an ARC, you know, expanding its operations. It knows very well that there's going to be PPECB that is going to come by. You know, the dedicated research It's going to be National Cash Marketing Council that is going to come by with a dedicated research so that you do what you are you are expected to do and do it best. National Cash Marketing Council does what it has to do and it does it best. In terms of, call it outsourcing if you like, but it is within the state. To an extent you have here a state entity that is renowned and that is doing, and it is very focused. It is doing research, nothing else, on agriculture. It's food for thought. I saw your hand, Mr. Stay, Mr. Van Dalen, Mr. Abram. Welcome, Mr. Gaylor, and noted as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I think we need to get a, I don't want to say a workshop, but information in your last year about how these entities are supposed to be functioning, because it seems like everyone is overlapping on the other entities' kind of task and job creation, and I'm really concerned about the entities not working well together as a group that's supposed to assist agriculture in a whole chair. I think, you know, it's some task that we need to look at and get the department to look at that specifically, Chair, because, you know, there's many of these things that's overlapping, and because it's this old saying that this one thought that one is doing and the other one thinks the other one is doing it. At the end of the day, no one is doing it, or everyone is doing it half-half and no one actually knows where the responsibility lies. Chair, I want to start off by saying thank you to the presentation. I just want to remind the chairperson, I don't think she was here last year, but she might have been. We asked that we can be sent these quarterly documents. I know we can search for it on the website, but sometimes we forget about it and we only remind it when we read about it in the newspapers. It will also be good for us if we can get it when you send it out to your list of people. And then, Chairperson, just something, I think I know the answer, but I want to ask the question in any case. Who decides on the percentage of levy for each of these commodities? And what influence do you have on that? Because I looked at it and it differs quite a lot from one commodity to the other. And maybe linked to that, Chairperson, is what the expected outcome is of the results. I've looked at the amount of research and the breakdown of what happens in the different commodities, and I'm sure it lies with the commodities itself. But I'm just concerned when I read some of the problems, and I want to mention the red meat industry. If I looked at the income where it states value at first point of sale, red meat is a massive industry in South Africa, but they are struggling with massive problems. So what influence would the National Agricultural Marketing Council have in trying to assist and say, listen, maybe more money must go into research or into marketing development or other issues so that we can get the red meat industry out of the problems at the moment. Chairperson, and on that same slide, I wanted to find out what is the influence or impact on what work is being done by the National Agricultural Marketing Council in looking at the value adding of products. And linked to that also, what at the final cost of what the price for a specific product is when you buy it. Because there's so many layers when people, all the role players from leaving the farm to when you buy a product on the shelf. Are you involved in that at all, looking at this added cost factors? Because there's a whole lot of discussion at the moment. The farmers say, I only get 3% or 5% for my product, but you know, consumers all say that food is too expensive, and it is. Food is quite expensive. So what is the role of the Agricultural Marketing Council in that? Then, Chairperson, on training and development, maybe I missed that, but in the slide I saw only FET colleges and agricultural colleges involved. What is the involvement of the universities? Because I've spoken to some people at universities and they all say they have graduates that need to go and do some practical things and you know, do you include them in your discussions or not? And then I've read about the National Red Meat Development Program. I've tried to get some information, and I just want to mention, Chair, that this week on Saturday, it was International Day of Veterinary something, Veterinary Council Day or something. I spent some time in my constituency, specifically on with communal farmers and having cattle and sheep and goats in that area. And Chair, I was quite shocked, I would say, that farmers in those communal areas don't have assistance from the Department of Agriculture. And I sometimes think that we are starting at a level, and I looked at what is being done with auction pens and custom feeding programs and all of that, and it's great, it's good. But normal things, the training sessions for people, normal things. And if I'm talking about normal things, Chair, I had some people with me that can assist, I don't know all these things, but to look at feeding patterns and just giving a salt lack near Abram during the winter period and things like that, to start with the thousands and thousands and thousands of small communal farmers out there. They were so happy to see us because no one has ever really come and speak to him about how do they farm. And I'm trying to think, Chairperson, sometimes we are trying to aim too high. And it's not, people mustn't now think I don't want people to get there. I'm just saying we need to start with the basics and take small steps. And you know, because you are taking this animals now out of where it comes from, put it in a feedlot. But the animal is already behind by the time it gets to the feedlot. So before the feedlot, what is it that we are doing? Or do we only concentrate on the feedlot and the selling, Chair? That's what I want to find out. And whose role is that? I will be asking a few questions about that specific area and go and visit the agricultural offices there and see what they are doing, because I was really not impressed with that. Thank you, Chair.
As you shall be responding to that question, perhaps if you could also give us some information as well about your next program. I think, yeah, when we have it at Ingqoq, on your, what do you call it, livestock improvement?
Thank you, Chairman. I just would like to know how far is the agreement and what is the impact of that agreement? It was the agreement with Walmart. I think at the time the minister said there was an agreement to help the smallholder farmers. He hailed it as a silver bullet for the smallholder farmers to sell their goods. I would like to know how far is that agreement, and are you involved in it, or do you know anything about it? As I seem to hear that you say there's a problem and you don't know how to solve it, but you are going to in some way. Then I would like to know how many percent of your annual targets in your shareholder compact have you reached, and what percentage of your budget was spent? And do you think that you are effective, and that this and that the taxpayers are getting bang for their 33 million rand per annum? Do you think you are effective? I need your opinion on it. You said you invest CFO, said that you get the budget from DEF and then you invest it, and then you make some money out of it. Now, it's the first time I hear of it. Is it like a sound business according to the PFMA? Can you go and invest the money that you are given from a budget to make more money? Do you have an investment strategy? Do you have an investment arm? How does this work? And if the investment actually loses money, who makes up for that? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Abraham?
Thank you very much, Chair. Once again, Chair, it's a pleasure to listen to the NAMC. Yes, Chair, there is a great deal of overlapping. And one has a couple of questions about that. Whether the overlapping is causing certain things to lag behind or not. But I'm sorry that Dr. Purchase, who in his own right is a walking encyclopedia on agri issues, that he has had to leave us. It would have been nice to have him here, because his expertise would have meant quite a bit in responses here. Not that the team here are not capable of doing it. I've got a lot of respect for them. Chairperson, firstly, I've got one or two questions, and then I've got some others that...
I hear the other day Dr. Purchase is asking a very pertinent question from Mr. Ramavulani.
Excuse me?
The other day I hear Dr. Purchase is asking a very pertinent question from Mr. Ramavulani.
I don't
and
know,
Dr. Purchase was saying, wow.
Chairperson, in the 2013 estimates of national expenditure, it is reported that the focus of the trade promotion and market access program of the department will be ensuring the establishment of and providing support to commodity groups and cooperatives through transfers to the NAMC and the Land Bank. Chair, I just want to pause here. Transfers to the NAMC and the Land Bank. Now, up to now, Chair, in the last financial year, I cannot remember whether we've had the Land Bank before us. And being a bank that finances agri-related issues, basically agri-related, I think that they should appear before us, Chair. We should know what they are doing. And I may hurriedly, Chair, having experienced what happened with that 100 million rand BEE fund which was stationed there and how it was looted. I want to congratulate the Land Bank that they have brought about a turnaround strategy that 31% of their loan book of the commercial agricultural sector loans are vested in the Land Bank. That is a significant improvement. I need to say that. Now, through the transfers, the department planned an establishment of 27, that is one per province per year, commodity-based co-ops and supporting the establishment of 9 agribusiness deals, one per province, over the medium term. How is the NAMC involved in the latter, as these are not reflected in its operational plan? If they are involved, how much funding have they received from the department in this regard? Are there any collaborative activities with the Land Bank in this regard? Another question, Chair. The budget for the National Red Meat Program has decreased from 1.7 million rand in 2013 to 724,000. That's a decrease of 1 million rand, Chair. The NAMC must provide an explanation. Are there any plans to expand this particular program? Now, Chairperson, arising from the presentation here, there are a number of issues that are raised. And I'm pleased that a member of the board comes from the Tiger Brand stable. These are the people that must do all the value chain, the end of the value chain marketing. A very, very important player in the food market in our country. Now, Chairperson, I've listened to the chairperson of NAMC's presentation, and I want to highlight what she has said, that they want to increase market access for all participants. They want to promote the efficiency of the marketing of agricultural products. They want to optimize export earnings from agricultural products and enhance the viability of the agricultural sector. Very noble principles, Chair. question is, how do you propose to get there? How do you propose to achieve all this? In the face of all the challenges that you are being faced with. Now, Chairperson, I want to refer now to an industry that I had known reasonably well many years ago until I gave up dairying in 1995 already. There is a very noble ideal here to help farmers. I think they are basically in the Eastern Free State, with regard to the dairy farmers in the Eastern Free State. Now, I don't know which of our colleagues were with us when we visited Dia Talawa. But at Dia Talawa, Chairperson, I went there on my own in 2010, and I was shown 70 cattle that had come in, supposed to be dairy cattle. But having had one look at those cattle, I told the person in charge there that these animals are very far from dairy animals. They are basically culls which somebody palmed off on the department. And when we went there, I think in 2011, I think Annette was there, in 2011, I asked those very same people, now, where are those 70 cattle that were here? And they said, well, look, you know, well, on the day that I was there, four had died already within 2 weeks. That's in 2010. But in 2011, Chair, those 70 cattle were distributed amongst the 32 beneficiaries because they couldn't produce enough milk. Now, all they had there, Chairperson, was they had one portable milking machine where I think you could milk two cows at a time, and they had a 200-litre tank in a place where I entered and there was nobody in charge, and there was I could have put some poisonous ingredient in that tank and nobody would have seen it. Now, Chairperson, in the same area, there are people, one of them is Yan Zim. Yan Zim was proclaimed the emerging dairy farmer of the year a couple of years ago. That man is a self-made man. When we were there in 2011, I think he was milking about 30 cows. But he had a major problem. Problem is that the nearest electricity point, Eskom point, is about a kilometer away. And he needed about 450,000 rand to electrify his dairy operation. He built his own milk parlor. No help from the state at that stage. Now, Chairperson, what I am asking is, and this is a question that I'll ask all other departments engaged in this type of activity, what are we doing with people like them? People who can show the prowess, people who have on their own attained something in life, and we don't help them. That man, as far as I'm concerned, can milk not 30 cows, he can milk 200. But see that we give him the necessary support. And I would like to know, what kind of support are you planning to give these 10 dairy farmers? There is no point where you try and take, say for argument's sake, 100 grand and you want to give each guy 10 grand, and all 10 of them fail. Why don't we track those people that have shown that they can do something? So, Chairperson, the dairy industry is not an easy industry. The producer gets virtually a pittance in terms of the investment that he makes, millions of rands that he puts into dairy cattle and infrastructure, and the return that he gets from these big timers in the business who want to pay you 3.50 I think at the moment for a liter of milk. So it's a highly competitive industry, and dairy farmers are leaving the industry at the rate of at least one per week, established dairy farmers. So be very careful what you are busy with. You might be playing with fire. Chairperson, then we take for example the issue of the poultry industry. You have referred to it here in a slide. You're talking here of a food system study. There's no number on the page. food system study, value chain studies with emphasis, I take it, on the poultry, meat, broilers and cows. Now, Jefferson, what are we seeing in the poultry industry today? Firstly, you spoke about the tariff structure where I think SAPA has requested that the import tariff should be around 82%. Now, when we talk in the NDP of the anticipation of creating so many 100,000 jobs in agriculture by 2030, I'm an optimist, Chair. It can be done, provided you have all your systems in place and you do the correct thing. Now, Chair, every time you import a kilogram of chicken, you are indirectly bringing into the country a kilo and a half of maize, or grains, shall we call them, because there might also be sunflower and soya, whatever. You are engaged in a counterproductive strategy. And on the one hand, you say that you want to create jobs. On the other, we are allowing imports to land on our shores unabated. You are damaging not only one industry, Chair, you are damaging a variety of industries. And may I dare say, Chair, you are also damaging the prospects of job creation in the industry. I said earlier, Chair, 3,000 jobs have been lost as a result of the curtailment. The smaller producer, Chair, that went out into the industry with a lot of hope and promise, those people are actually biting the dust. What are your strategies to try and bring about an intervention to save those smaller producers? Because remember, at the moment, that smaller producer was able to put bread on the table for his family. And now that bread, he will have to find somewhere else. Because we are indirectly responsible as a government to damage that particular industry. Chairperson, I want to touch on something that some people will say, yeah, but that is game, and it resorts under environmental affairs, and it resorts here and there. But Chair, there are game farmers who actually supply venison and other game meat. You will find in certain butcheries venison available, that sort of thing. Now, that's the one end of it, Chair. The other end is that it's a pity. It's a real pity that it is reported over the weekend that the Transfrontier National Park between our three or four countries in the northern part of the country, borders, that there is no rhino left. They have all been poached left, right and center. Now, Chairperson, harvesting of a product from game is the equivalent of farming with game. Whether you are harvesting meat or whether you are harvesting rhino horn, although it has very little to do with the NAMC, but since they are a marketing council, Chair, and since there appears to be a market, an unsatiable market, I would say, for rhino horn, isn't it perhaps time that we all put our heads together, and it should not be the space of only a particular department in government, that we promote rhino farming in the country, and in that way the harvesting of horn, so that it can be marketed, and you will then be looking after your rhino population. Otherwise, Chair, well, you know, I've already got grandchildren. My grandchildren will only see little statuettes of rhino or photographs thereof. My last question on this round, Chairperson, is the whole issue of the impact of the sectoral determination on wages. That impact, Chairperson, is very negatively felt by the small-scale producer. That producer is unable, Chair, to be able to afford the new sectoral determination. And I think there is one myth that we need to clear. And that is that whilst farm worker wages may not have been the very best, we tend to forget that it is the only economic sector where the farmer has to provide housing. It is a cost. That cost is not brought into the equation. The farmer has to provide medical service. The farmer has to provide rations. And in the case where I used to farm, we also provided grazing rights, which cost you 50 rand per month per large animal. That's the cost of providing grazing rights. Now, Chairperson, put all these things together. And while the take-home pay may not be very good and it should improve, we should be very careful that in trying to increase wages, we are not going to have unintended consequences. And the unintended consequences are going to be that we are going to lose jobs, we are going to get farmers mechanizing, and those that cannot afford it, the small farmer, Chair, will be out of business completely. And I would like to know from Mr. Ramabulana that since they want to open all these things up, you know, access for markets and blah, 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 will there be commodities at the end of the day for which you want to open up accesses of markets? I would like to know those things, Chairperson. Thank you.
Any further questions? I forgot to mention, Mr. Symington, you know, my concern on a statement made by the gentleman who was seated there from Dit Warrens. He made a statement to the effect that when I was asking about the impact on the Dit Warrens, you know, farm worker strike, that that took, you know, the farmers back, years back. That's quite a worrisome statement to come from you guys. I would have thought that whatever issues that were there are supposed to be an eye-opener to an extent that we are now in the step, in the right step forward with whatever challenges that would have been there. It could be a debatable question. I mean, for a statement to be made like that is quite worrisome. That there were strikes, it then means that you are now taken backwards. For me, it's supposed to be forward step. If we are all to move in a direction that takes us forward, with all the role players at play, I just thought of it as I'm listening to some of the members. Whilst other members are still, you know, still on the research. I'll come to you just now, Mr. Gale. To an extent, you know, there is so much duplication going on. I'm also reminded of what CSR is doing, especially in the cotton side of things. Whilst you are also engaged in some research work, that's what I hear the CEO saying. Whilst these levies are coming through, part of the work is to do research, and then I'm highlighting the cotton, and then I'm saying to myself, but that's also what CSR is doing. As to whether there is any collaboration, Mr. Gaylor?
Thank you, Chair. Just a few. You are targeting to fill 70 posts, vacant posts. Why are you targeted 70%, not 100%? The first one. then which farmer organization or civil society or NGO, if any, are involved in FEN R10? Yeah, R10. Right, then the next one is you are intending to do training to develop service to smallholder producers. Which four qualities are those and what type of training? Because there's a lot of training going around. What type of training is it? Now, let's get to your slide. Unfortunately, your slides have got no numbers. You are saying here, over the past 4 years, you had a scheme that assisted farmers to sell over 6,640 animals in the Eastern Cape, with generating 42 million. That's about 6,000 per cattle, roughly 6.3 per cattle. Now, there are a lot of these schemes going around. A lot of them, see them in the books all over, way in the Eastern Cape. Where can we go and see the impact of this year in the Eastern Cape? We know that yours is just to assist, you know. Then you're also saying here that you're working with CASP. As far as you are concerned, because as far as I'm concerned, CASP has got no impact. I travel a lot. I'm from the Eastern Cape, the worst areas. Then I'd be happy if you can travel with me at my cost. The worst areas, there's no impact at all. Where they don't even know about agriculture. Where, as far as you know, do you feel has CASP got any impact? And if you feel that it has impact in the Eastern Cape, way in the Eastern Cape? Where in the Eastern Cape is that? Then, Chairperson, yours is to advise. You don't have much of a budget. Chairperson, one was happy to note that in KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, at least, the maize, according to the documents that we have, there's good maize production. And one encourages that to happen in other provinces. And I think the major problem is irrigation schemes, and I think you would agree. Do you advise agriculture to resuscitate the irrigation schemes? Because we talk of job creations here and food security. And if you do, can you just brief us about that? We're sitting with a high rate of poverty, and we've got all this, and Chairperson, you are right. ARC is there for research. Why does the government have, why does everybody want to do research? Even the department does research, Chairperson. Now you ask yourself, what's happening here? The same applies with these projects. Who is supposed to be getting the projects from government? Who is supposed to be getting assistance? These are all South Africans. Why are there certain areas where, in certain areas, there is no assistance at all? It does not exist at all. It just simply does not exist at all. So can you just brief us, yes, we're assisting year and year and year and year. Not financially, we know you don't have much of a budget financially. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. you've covered me on CASP. A simple question there, perhaps as a rider on CASP, is that typically we are told all the time that CASP is allocated as per province. Now, here you have National Agriculture Marketing Council. Whether that is funding from province that you are making use of at a provincial point. And then I did say something. But more interesting for me also is the infrastructure that you spoke about, to an extent, having had discussion at one point with SAPA and other initiatives within the infrastructure on marketing of agriculture products. My area of interest there would have been more about collaboration and coordination. At one point, I even heard somebody from Transnet, one of the Transnet outfits, almost readily saying, you know, if you had to take us through to any specific point, we shall accord a plan where, within which a time can equally be accorded as to when that plan could be implemented for a rail facility. So that would be of interest. And again, on the duplication side of things, you know, we talk about agro-processing here. Now, if you are going to go to IDC, you're going to hear a lot of projects supported by IDC on agro-processing, which we never get to hear about, must say. But they relate directly to the sector we're in. Whether also you are coordinating with them as well, it's an interest area. The last point I wanted to talk about, I'll equally be keen on some of the research work that you do on the information on food prices, among others. Perhaps that's an area that we might wish to allocate ourselves a special session where we get a briefing on, not in any area that in time that we're dealing with. Maybe just a general statement I wanted to make, which is the last point I wanted to raise. In line with what Mr. Abram was raising, and again, we always make a statement and a point that says we produce more of what, how does it go? We eat more that we don't produce, and we produce more that goes out. And then statements being made about, you know, some of the, you know, grades, if you were to talk about orange, for instance, you know, grade A, grade B, you know, for your export market. And then the grades that are more C and so on, it is for local consumption. In other words, your best, if you like, grades, they have to be consumed elsewhere, and we're not good enough to consume the best grades, if that is to be the direct translation of such. With all the issues raised by Mr. Abram related to, you know, the fact that more and more, with the tariff being introduced, we are going to get our food a lot more expensive, if that is to follow. To an extent, you are to ask yourself a question as to whether we are indeed going to afford, because that's the bottom line at the end of the day. Currently, we are told that you know, so much numbers of people go to bed without food. But on the other hand, you have so much surplus that those people cannot afford. Question of affordability in a capitalist mode of production.
Thank you, Chair. There are questions here that I can answer, and there are questions that I will refer to the CEO. The questions from Madam Steyn, which are the duplication of research, no, that was the chair, the overlap, collaboration between SOEs. The collaboration about with SOEs, I know for sure, we are working with everyone because we don't have the budget. So when we are faced with implementing or making a difference, we can only do it in partnership with other people. We work very closely with the DTI. We work very closely with the Competition Commission because of the challenges within agriculture that have impacted very much on the Competition Commission. And so we really are collaborating per issue as much as possible. The CEO spends a lot of time on collaboration. Ronald, you will answer the percentage of levy expected and who decides on that. Red meat point of sale and the impact at value add on the final price rate on the NMC. Universities, again, we wouldn't be where we are if we didn't work so closely with the universities. We work with almost all of them, including the ones in Limpopo, which were not really in the mainstream. But Ronald will mention the projects that we are doing with universities, Stellenbosch, of course, and others. Lack of assistance to communal farmers. It's a perpetual problem, and I will answer this not from the NAMC point, although in dairy I will touch on that. The communal farmers and lack of assistance to them is a national problem. When I started, I said around the Dorrance and just in the agricultural community as a whole, we are looking at a social compact. That social compact doesn't just mean the people, the black farmers or the black farm workers will be given some kind of a grant. It says, as people in agriculture, we are all rural. Farms are by nature in rural areas. So commercial farmers and the other people who live there, the communities, they are neighbors. But because of the social skewing, you know, we must face it, for the farm workers, it's a matter of master and servant. It's like even in an office, my secretary looks at me as her boss. We need facilitation in agriculture. We need to attend to those dynamics if we're ever going to move forward. So with lack of assistance to communal farmers, it's also the same thing. In our government, we have national, we've got provincial, we've got municipalities. For instance, if we talk about fresh produce markets, where most of our small-scale farmers take their stuff or they buy their stuff if they are hawkers, it's a municipal prerogative. So I think it's important to really appreciate that within agriculture, there are very few normal situations. And this is what we try and understand. On MESMAT. MESMAT, I know last year we mentioned that we're working with them. We are working with them. Ronald will also mention that. That's our development side. And they have technical expertise that they are paying for themselves. So for us, it's to make sure they are really a market. But that also helps us to understand the contracts and teach our people how to understand. When MESMAT says, I need you to grow squash, and you deliver on this and this and this date, it means the market is there. But sometimes you'll find that the squash that they're growing, they won't understand that if you don't pick up marrow, if you don't harvest it at 4 in the morning or 6 in the morning, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's twice the size. And MESMAT doesn't want that. They've got specifications. So it's all those things that we try and walk through using these kinds of contracts. Market focus, I'll leave that to you, Ronald. And the transfers to the NMC and Land Bank, I'm really not sure. Maybe it's an operational issue. I've talked about the value chain, but the dairy industry. And in our report, we mentioned the 16 million. We've had, when I opened my talk, I talked about the challenges that we have with the impact on the ground of the transformation levy. And this is all wound up together. With the dairy industry, we've had meetings. We know about the cows that they've been buying. And last year we had a meeting, I think two or three meetings, in which I said, and I said, guys, to me, if you give someone cattle, it can be killed for a lobola ceremony. It can die because it's an old one. Why can't we look at something more sustainable? So we have, within dairy, we have sitting on with management some of the new schemes that we're looking at. As you say correctly, Member of Parliament, you have electricity challenges. What are the other things that can be done around pasteurizing units so that they don't have, because even electricity comes with its own costs. So those are the innovations that we're looking at. Then I will just go to the 105 and the adverse impact on farmers. Everything that the portfolio member has said is true. The 105 and sectoral determination is a game changer in South Africa. Our agriculture will never be the same. But then what do we do? Do we sit as stakeholders, both farmers, and what do? That is what we are engaged with right now. What is even said is that this 105, it started in Dedorens, but it could have started anywhere in our country. Dedorens has a particular social mix because it's one of the first towns when you come from where the buses stop. You have people from Lesotho, you have people from Somalia, it's a center that doesn't have to really support farm workers. It's a place that has everyone from everywhere, and most of them are not employed. So those are the issues that we are looking at. And in Dedorens, we have a high malnutrition rate in children. That's what the clinics tell us. But it lands with us being in agriculture. It lands with the NAMC who is having schemes in the grapes, the emerging grape farmers there. So I think as to how we are going to achieve this situation of having a vibrant marketing or agricultural sector, it's really a challenge. But I think we're up to it as South Africans. We've been through this. And I feel that this has forced a new way of looking at agriculture. And while I hand over to my CEO, I can only say 37 million for the work that we are doing is far, far enough.
Thank you very much. I agree 100% that we need a workshop, one on the roles, number two on understanding and marketing of agricultural products. We need that. One of the issues you raised was that we are pushing for a tariff on poultry. That will increase the price of food. You're right, but will create jobs. You're not going to get that answer from a research technical research organization. You need special skills to understand the complexities of that research. So when we talk about research, we're not trying to compete with the ARC. We're trying to help you answer the questions that you can't find answers for. That's what I mean by research. And therefore, there is a need to understand marketing of agricultural products much better and to understand the role. Because this issue in terms of research is broad. And this need to understand that much better. I can give you a lot of examples in terms of issues that you have raised. What I like about coming here every time is that I get to hear the frustrations you have in terms of the fact that agriculture is not performing very well. And the question is, why is it that it's not performing very well? You need someone to understand the intricacies of why farmers are not succeeding. You're not going to get that from a technical research institute. It has nothing to do with whether you have a best variety of tomatoes or not. It has everything to do with farmer support programs. And how do you do that? And when we talk about research, we're trying to figure out how to do that. You're not going to do that with 87 million. That brings me to the second point. You raise issues in terms of the amount of money being raised by cotton and other industries on research. The IRC was here last week, I'm sure. I'm sure they told you that the budget is not enough. And what you raise as what you provide them with the portfolio committee, it's enough to cover the operational expenses. Who's supposed to provide additional money for them to do their work? What we have done is to get industries to actually put up their own money in order to fund the IRC. And this is what we're supposed to be doing in South Africa, and we have industries doing that. I'm not sure if I should be telling industries not to collect research money, because then we're in deep trouble. So I can't stop we can't stop the IRC from collecting money, because then we're in deep trouble. So we need industries to collect research money so that we pass that to the IRC and other investors, so that we understand how to be competitive much, and then be able to create the jobs we want to create, and then be able to export and earn foreign exchange so that we can buy the diesel that we buy. So it's important. It's important that we have this workshop to understand these complexities. We decide as we have guidelines that provide some kind of indication as what percentage of levy money should be spent on research, information, market development, and other things. We provide some level of leeway, but 70% of the money should be spent on research, market development, and information. When we see that industries are spending a lot more money on market development, we try and bring them back, because we think that this we should continue to have a specific focus on making sure that ARC gets enough money. So we want to spend as much of that money into research, more especially technical research, because we don't think that the ARC gets enough. The question in terms of what we do in terms of value adding and our role on understanding value chains. If you look at the food cost review, when you read that, you will see that there is a much better unpacking of different value chains. For example, last year we unpacked the wheat value chain as well as the bread as well as the maize value chain much better. This year we'll unpack other value chains. And again, the reason why we do that is because I'm 100% sure that 90% of us don't know how much it costs, for argument's sake, Tiger Brand produce a bag of millimeter. Then if we don't know that, we are not going to be able to understand how to ensure that the entire value chain is competitive. So we unpack that. That is research. We unpack that and provide that research so that the level of information that is there in the market is much better. And you do that, you can then take informed decisions. However, I would love to stand up here and say, well, I'm picking 20 or 30 value chains. Like, I'm not going to do that with 30 billion. However, it's important that if we understand markets much better, there isn't a single industry anywhere in the world that hasn't grown if it hasn't developed markets. We spent 30 million. There was a question in terms of training and development and the role of universities. The chairperson has indicated we work with all universities. We work with colleges, more importantly, Dombey Snega, Fort Cox. We work with colleges in the Free State. I can provide those names in terms of the four colleges that we work with, but we also work very closely with Stellenbosch, Free State University of Pretoria. Those three we work closely with. Be happy to provide the lists and the programs of the courses that we provide, so that you can understand the marketing material that is used, and the lecturers who actually provide the training, and the level of the NQF levels in terms of the level of the certificate that people receive. question in terms of whether we believe we're effective. I'm one of those who believe that I will try to be quick because we have to finish really quickly. There was a question of whether we are effective. I think it's we're probably not in the right position to judge that. But I think that industries we work with would be in a much better position to judge that. And we have been saying to the portfolio committee, we would love to get all the industries who actually collect money and do this work to come and talk to you, so that you get a much better appreciation of what's going on out there. And they're the much people in a position to actually judge whether we're effective or not. And that offer is still on. Like a lot of the, more especially the trusts and levy administrators, have been requesting to come and talk to you, so that you get a much better appreciation of the issues out there. And that we would like to do that. And maybe they will be in a much better position to judge whether we're effective or not. The issues in terms of the issues in terms of infrastructure and infrastructure and I'll link that to irrigation schemes and SIP. You are correct in saying that if you are to create the million jobs that the National Development Plan wants, you need irrigation schemes, you need land in former homelands, and you need land that has been transferred working very well. I can give you an example now. Transnet has finished the branch line from Mthatha to East London. There's a lot of maize being produced. The branch line has been improved from a 11-ton axle to a 20-ton axle. How do we ensure that the farmers who are around that branch line have access to silos so that they can produce and the product that they produce can be transported to where the market is? And that's what the SIP is supposed to do. And when we do that, we are then able to use infrastructure to grow and create the jobs we need in rural areas. Another example, Transnet has finished to improve the branch line from Balfour to East London and upgrading the harbour facility in East London. So the maize from Douglas can actually come down to East London through the improvement of the branch line. There are a lot of land reform farms in that area. That's actually not working. The issue is how do we use that infrastructure to ensure that those farms that are there are brought back into production so that people can take advantage of that. And that's what the SIP is trying to do. Part of that is ensuring that the irrigation schemes we have are working. There are challenges, as you know, in some of the irrigation schemes, but some of them provide a lot of potential. For a case in point, Makatini provides a lot of potential. There are a lot of problems, and it is our role, all of us, to ensure that we address those problems, and we'll appreciate the portfolio committee's assistance, ensuring that those issues that are a challenge are addressed so that we can get those land back into production. The question in terms of who is involved in FANAPAN, we coordinate the node in South Africa. We have almost all the investors that are agriculture in nature involved in FANAPAN, and we have all the unions. I think the node membership is probably in a region of about 60. I can provide the list of the node membership and the work that FANAPAN does, but we coordinate that on behalf of DAF. There was a question in terms of the schemes that we have in the Eastern Cape and the amount of money that has gone down by over a million. It has gone down by over a million because, one, the Eastern Cape government has given us 1.6 million last year and has given us 3.6 million this year, which was cash money in order to buy feed, that we used to feed the livestock in the custom feeding facility. The chairperson visited us in our function in the Eastern Cape last year, saw the 120 animals that are in the facility. We're going to have a function again this year in a different area with animals in the facility, because the Christian municipality is putting a lot of money in developing custom feeding facilities. So, and we'll provide that invitation to the portfolio committee, and members who want to come and visit are welcome to do that. We'll provide that in due course so that members can visit. And let me touch on the issue in terms of focus. Middle of June. I'm not sure of the date, but we'll provide that within the week or two so that you have that quickly. And let me touch on this issue in terms of focusing on the basics. We don't have an extension team at the NMC. What we know is that if I'm a farmer and my neighbor makes 6,000-7,000 rands per animal, chances are I will want to make the same amount. What we therefore do is we make sure that we move animals from the communal area into a feeding facility. Then those farmers who are there get to learn how to take care of the animals, the value of providing the right feed, the value of ensuring that you have access to different markets, and that way they get to learn based on the amount of money they make. I can go and teach people how to farm with animals, or I can show them that they can make 6,000 bucks. When they look at animals walking around, they look at 6,000 rands walking around. Then they take care of their livestock. That's the strategy we have adopted. It might be very wrong, but we have adopted it. And for to date, it has ensured that we put 42 million rands into rural communities. And we think it's a substantial investment. If we had more than 36 million, we'd probably have 20 other facilities, and wouldn't be having people saying that they're not being serviced. So that is the challenge we face. This question was, is CASP effective? Well, we got 1.6 million and we're getting 3.6 million for those facilities that we have. I'm sure we'll get it. We're getting 14 million for the vineyard scheme in the Northern Cape. I'm not in a position to talk about the rest of the CASP programs, but where we have helped CASP understand how to structure programs much better, we found that they have been effective. Issues in terms of food prices and others due to time, I'm willing to provide documentation that could help the debate much better going forward. But I agree with you. We need a workshop to understand marketing much better, because I think that's more important. Thank you.
Can I ask your indulgence just for 2 minutes? I think I was
started counting.
You started counting. Can Andres just say a little bit about how we are trying together with Tiger Brands
go
to
for
substitute?
Just quickly on that. Koo is now the number one brand in South Africa. And what we've done starting 4 years ago in our value chain, we were importing a portion of our product, quite a big portion of the beans, and what we've tried to do is to extend the procurement into the local market. Basically this year, I think we will, providing the weather will be good, we've put down contracts into the market, we've done extensive trials for the last number of years, and this year we should be able to get between 80 and 90% of our local or of the beans that we need from the local market. Part of our imports in the past was basically all deep sea imports, meaning that it came from China or North America. We've replaced part of that with imports from the rest of Africa, so that it's basically a system of from Africa for Africa. So if you would like to see what we are trying to do, you're welcome to come and visit us next Thursday in Marble Hall. We'll start at 12. It's an open invitation. That's just a small way to try to show what we are currently doing. I think it's possible not just for beans in South Africa, it's possible for every agricultural product.
Thank you. think what has come through to us is that we really need to plan and have sessions. I don't know, because your programs are very, very tight. But I think what going forward, we will try and have a session or two with the portfolio committee and maybe take you to where we work so that there's more understanding. Thank you.
Members, that's the response, or those are the responses to a number of our questions that we've asked. well, obviously, disadvantaged by time, often, in areas where we would have loved to continue. Okay, if there are any comments, last comments from the members, we may not have to get any responses to the questions, looking at the time. I must also mention that this venue is going to be used at 2 o'clock. So the intention was to be out of here by 1:30. Okay, Mrs. Day?
Chairperson, yeah, just one request maybe. I don't know if we can ask for a request, but something that's been bothering me with this whole meat scandal, labelling scandal thing, is I'm concerned about the imports of the meat. There's, I don't know how many million tons of kangaroo and water buffalo and all kinds of things being imported into the country. And I'm really concerned, Chair, because we now are all so amazed that this thing is found in our meat and the fact that we are eating it. But if it was imported, whose role is it to check what is anything that we import being used for in South Africa? And I'm not just now mentioning meat. I'm just mentioning because that was the current scandal. And I want to find out who is that body, that person, that agency that needs to check what our people eat in South Africa. Because my problem is everyone is responsible. It's this point again that everyone is responsible and at the end no one is responsible. So I don't know. I think this is the correct place to ask that question. Who or which agency or which government department is responsible to monitor imports into the country and whether our consumers are protected. I'm not even speaking about our farmers. I'm speaking about our consumers are protected in, you know, on our agricultural products.
Okay. And any other pointed question?
Chair, I think there are a couple of questions that Mr. Ramabulana did not have time to answer. I hope he's noted them. But I've just got two more, Chair, that he must also answer. He's used to sending replies, so he must please do it. The one is, Chair, is the NAMC in any way directly or indirectly involved by the department in formulating their mechanization policy? Because at the moment that thing is a shambles. Second one, Chair, we should be all systems go. Our people in the rural areas of our country own about 48-50% of all livestock. But if you look at the reflection of the GDP, you will find, here I notice that the levies collected, the single largest amount is it 18 billion or 18 million? There are so many knots, they look to me like billion. 18 billion, Chair, single largest amount. Now, that shows you the importance of that particular industry. It's an easy industry to get into. What we need to do, Chair, is improve the livestock quality of our people and that our people can produce enough so that we can obviate what Mrs. Steyn was talking about now. All the nonsensical stuff that we are allowing into our country can be produced here in terms of super quality beef. We need to go all systems, Chair, and promote that particular sector. He must send us his ideas on how we can optimize on what's happening at the moment, which schemes are not working properly, and so that we can have a sort of a one or two channels that if we do this, then this would be the end results. We need that kind of futuristic planning, Chair, and a future scenario. Our people need a bit of support. They also need some education. You see, some of our people, Chairperson, believe that if I've got numbers, I'm a wealthy man. But you can have numbers of low genetic quality animals that produce nothing. So we need to go out there and spend time with our people to make them understand artificial insemination. You know, you've got animal diseases. It's so simple, Chair. We've got so many young people. Why don't we take those youngsters that come out of colleges and high school, give them a crash course so that they can go out into the communities and assist the people? As simple as that, Chair. If we want to do it, Chair, the word impossible does not exist. It can be done. We need to have the will to do it. Thank you, Chair.
Well, once again, on the livestock improvement, if I'm not mistaken, I think it is Department of Rural Development and Land Reform that also has a similar program. And there's another entity within the department, I cannot remember, but also it has a similar scheme, ARC. ARC. Kaunafaso Tihom. Got it right this time. To understand, David, if you can assist us, you know, future engagements, and perhaps as we do our quarterly reviews, with areas wherein there is expected synergies. Examples are being made about this livestock improvement scheme. We've also spoken about irrigation scheme. Who else is involved in the irrigation scheme? So that we really get onto the issue now of coordinating and also collaborating with our programs. It is bothering us, I must say, because all the time we're talking about scarce resources. But these resources are equally very, very depleted all over. And split all over. To an extent, you cannot make much impact, if any. Now, that's the main attraction, I would imagine, to all of us as members here. Members, I think we have come to that end of the answers raised and those that have not been responded to. If you can also put all of those in writing, perhaps by end of next week. What we shall be doing, as I cannot remember when, but you have the program, David. We shall come back to all these questions that we keep on saying, because they are minuted. When the department and the entity does not reply as expected. They are noted in the minutes. To an extent, we shall have to have a. We actually have scheduled some sessions before end of June, two of those, if I'm not mistaken, wherein we shall have to go through those outstanding items. Next week, we have a session with NASA.